Hi, this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nick Friedel, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. We have a very special guest today, John Greenberg, the founder of The Athletic. John, how you doing, brother?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good, pretty good. How's everything going in Bullsland? Oh, wait, I think I know the answer to that.
It's a wasteland, John. I've been staring at the drywall all morning, wondering what went wrong listening to Air Supply. It's been a really rough day. But, you know, before we get into the beloved Bull, I'd love to get a little bit into your history, a little 411 on where you're from, how you started in the business, but most importantly, first of all, congratulations on the three-year anniversary of The Athletic. Talk a little bit about how you founded The Athletic also.
Okay, well, I'm originally from a little city outside Pittsburgh in the Ohio Valley, Steubenville, Ohio. I actually did grow up a Bulls fan because they were kind of the national team if you didn't have, you know, a team in your market. And even if you did, you know, I'm 40 years old, so I was the perfect age for the Jordan years.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up there and I've lived in Chicago since 03. I was in my early 20s and I worked for a long time, and I worked for a company called Team Marketing Report for a long time. It's sports business writing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I jumped aboard when ESPN started their local sites. They hired me to be the columnist because I was cheap. And then I stuck with ESPN from 09 through 15 when they discontinued the locals. And then one guy in particular emailed me out of the blue because he'd been doing research about these guys had the idea of The Athletic. These guys, they live in San Francisco. They're sports fans from other markets. And they wanted to do this website. Basically, their vision was basically what it's turned into, plus mm-hmm. maybe more national stuff than we expected. But and I knew I needed a job in a couple months when they emailed me. So I listened, and I was skeptical at first, but they won me over just because I could see they had a real plan. And, you know, I was obviously a little nervous about the subscription side of it, but we stuck with it. I launched in end of January 2016, you know, knowing that the Cubs are going to be really good. At that time, we thought the Bulls were still going to be good.
Yeah.
You know, Fred Hoiberg's first year, they were actually, by the time we were, honestly, when we were talking about launching, they were decent.
Yes.
Before Joakim got hurt.
21-12.
They were a decent team.
Exactly.
And, you know, so we launched then, and it was, the Cubs obviously carried us our first year, and we're still here. You know, we've had really good coverage in all the teams, so I'm really happy with where we're at now and starting our fourth year.
Well, no doubt. I mean, the Bulls coverage specifically, you know, I follow all the major Chicago teams, but the Bulls coverage with Stephen Ngo and Darnell Mayberry is like second to none. I think Casey Johnson's the only beat writer who rivals what you guys do. And
Casey's been doing it. You know, he's got the institutional knowledge. I wanted to hire someone when I hired Darnell. I wanted to hire someone who wasn't here. Like, I purposely hired someone out of market, which is not our usual business model.
Mm-hmm.
Our business model is hiring people in the market that have followers to bring in.
Mm-hmm.
You're bringing in subscribers when you join. And I wanted to do something different for the Bulls just because I felt like, you know, those stories have been written, everyone that's been here for a long time. So I wanted to get someone with fresh eyes.
Yeah, and that's worked really well because the insights that he provides, especially coming from Oklahoma City, who I thought was kind of like a mirror team in a way, you know, like a lot of great young players that didn't live up to the potential, unfortunately, as far as winning a title, but, you know, they've unfortunately moved on. I think their reasoning was more for Durant's departure instead of injuries with us, but I can't say enough great stuff about it. So what are your goals for the site going forward? Anything else that you'd like to share with us that on the docket for The Athletic going forward?
Well, there's going to be a big emphasis on podcasts this year. So you'll see, you know, Stefan did one with Will Gottlieb, who used to freelance for us for a couple years. And we kind of had to let Will go. Will's awesome. He did actually a really good job just mm-hmm. for like budget reasons.
Yeah.
He's great. He actually was really good work when he would work the locker room a few times. But mm-hmm. anyway, so we're going to do more podcasts. We'll have some kind of Bulls podcast going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's just adding more subscribers. You know, that's our goal, is to keep telling stories and to keep adding to our subscriber base.
That's fantastic. Well, looking forward to continued success for the site. Now, unfortunately, we have to go into a more dire situation, which is the current status of the beloved Bull. You're obviously a Bulls fan. I loved your article. It wasn't that long ago. I read about in the bars. You don't see the team being covered. And I'm just really disappointed. I've been disappointed overall with just how I think the Bulls have been unfairly covered. Maybe it's not by the media, but just they're held to a different standard, it seems to me. You know, the Bears haven't won a playoff game since 2011, January. And, you know, they're beloved. And the Bulls have had, I think, more success than most teams. And yet they're just a pariah on the national and the local scene. What do you think the reason is for that, the primary reasons for it?
I think, yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think a lot of ways they are held to higher standards simply because of the success they've had in the past.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Of just like that Jordan era. And it's kind of like the success they hold themselves to.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like they always talk about the Jordan stuff. Like Pax talks about it a lot. You know, I was on the court with Michael Jordan and stuff. And what happened was, is the Bulls told you they knew what they were doing, right?
Yeah.
We know what we're doing. We're going to, you know, we're going to tear this apart. And then what happened? They were terrible for a number of years. And it didn't really look like they were going to get out of it. And then Paxson took it over, right? And then people got excited again. And then what happened? Nothing. They could never get over that hump. They won one playoff series. You know, there's an idea that they didn't spend money when they could have. They never went to the tax, you know, until obviously the Derrick Rose time. And I think then that was the thing. Like, oh, okay, well, these guys aren't, you know, they're not serious. They're not serious about really winning. And it was just the way it was run, I think, rubbed people the wrong way. Now, the Tibbs stuff, I think, you know, listen, the whole thing about this past era team was just because Derek got hurt.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. And, I mean, that's it. Like, we can say whatever we want about other stuff, but, like, it's just because Derek got hurt. And, like, yeah, did they handle – was everything handled right during that time? No. Like, they did a really bad job. And Derek and his people did a bad job, too, of communicating about that year, that post-injury year. And I even talked about with Tibbs, of all people. He even said, like, yeah, we screwed that up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he thought he screwed it up, but he thought someone screwed it up.
Right.
He agreed that with me that they screwed that up big time. That really, and that again, you know, it just started rubbing people the wrong way. Just like they couldn't get it done, and they were running almost like this big market team, but they run themselves like a family business type thing.
Sure,
you know, they're talking about the profits and stuff, and it's a tough fan base. But oh, I think someone said this the other day on Twitter, like, every NBA fan base seems to be unhappy these days, you know, except maybe the Warriors. You know, every other fan base is just like pissed off all the time. And, you know, it's a big city. It's a big market. And you have to deal with that. And the same sense, though, like the fact that, you know, you want to talk about Stefan's article, I know, saying everyone should be fired, which we could write like every week. But, you know, here's how I go on that. You know, I don't think it's firing because John Paxson's, like, done some horrible job. He hasn't. Yeah. You know, it's not easy to work for Reinsdorf. You have limitations, you know, on things you could do, and Jerry's admitted that in print.
Yes.
But at the same time, most people don't have these kind of jobs for this long, you know, and there's kind of a reason for that. Sometimes you need fresh eyes. And, like, I talked to – for a Cubs book project I was working on, I talked to Jim Hendry, the Cubs GM,
mm-hmm.
and he said basically – about, he was talking about how great the rebuild was. And he goes, listen, I couldn't have done that. He's like, did I know we need to rebuild? Yes, but I couldn't have got up there, stood up there, said, I've been here for the X many years, and now we're going to totally rebuild under me. He goes, they needed someone with rings, and they needed someone from somewhere else to come in and rebuild this team. And he's like, obviously they got Theo, it was the best. But I thought he was, you know, with a few years removed, I thought that was a really good take. And that's what Epstein said when he took over the Cubs. He said 10 years is about the expiration date for executives. You know, Danny Ainge obviously is the only one I think that has hired longer than Pax. He has hired at the same time as Pax, the same summer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, Danny Ainge. And you touch on a good point. You know, Danny Ainge has never drafted a player to make all NBA.
Right.
And Pax has drafted three. You know, he drafted Noah, Rose, and Butler, and you know, Butler at 30th, to me, is one of the best picks in the last decade. Noah went from first-team All-NBA in 1 year to a guy who was barely guarded out in the court. I mean, we just had declines with Rose and Noah that other organizations haven't seen, and it's such a shame. But you're right. You know, I've started to come around on it, too. I could sense that you're at least realistic about Pax, that most people automatically hate the guy. And I think he's very competent. I think he's a great guy. And I'm a huge fan of his. And I think he's done overall a very good job for the team. But after all this time, it's not working. You know, it's just, we just got to step back and look, and this isn't working. I think he's hit a home run in the last two draft picks.
Yeah, I like him.
And I'd like to see him make the pick again this year. But, I mean, if we have a – this Boylan situation just awful. So, I mean, let's get into that a little bit. Do you agree with Stefano's article today? I mean, do you feel it's time to fire the free – I think we both probably agree that this Boylan's not going to work out as a coach. But what about the entire front office and just have a house cleaning?
Yeah, I mean, I think they should. I think they absolutely should. And just, like I just said, you know, start over.
Yep.
Like, you know, I think why not just start over? No one's got jobs for life. You know, Paxton can stay in the organization, obviously. But, like, and I don't dislike Paxton. And I don't dislike Gar. Gar, actually, when I got laid off from ESPN, was one of the few people, to, you know, industry-wise, outside journalism, that to send me a text message. You know, I thought that was very nice. He didn't have to do that. Yeah. I joked about him signing me to a 10-day. And he asked if I could shoot, which I can't. But yeah. I actually like Gar, and I feel bad that it's kind of gone this way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, remember, he was co-executive of the year back in the day. But, yeah, I don't see why not. It's not working, you know?
Yeah.
Now, maybe the Ryan's are like, no, we want to keep the rebuild going. And I would say, like, that would be more believable to keep these guys if they didn't promote Jim Boylan with, like, a lot of the nonsense. You know, and Pax is not a nonsense guy. But, like, I think, personally, I just think Paxton wanted someone who's going to be a disciplinarian.
Yes.
I think he was tired of guys walking all over Fred or how he thought they were. And he totally just wanted a guy who was going to come in and, as Jim would say, put boots to asses.
Yes.
You know? And, but, I mean, it's obvious. This, like, if they bring Boylan back next year, I can't imagine that they do. Because, listen, Pax gets sick of guys. Like, everyone say, no, Pax gave him his word, you know, his whatever. But, like, yeah, Pax gets sick of coaches he likes, and then he realizes he doesn't like them about a month later. So they have to get rid of Boylan.
Well,
they won't get rid of Pax or Foreman, but they have to get rid of Boylan.
The only time things happen is when there's ramifications with the season ticket base. That happened with Krause. I thought Krause was going to be there forever. And then you finally heard that things were starting to happen because of that. And I think this might be the year it finally happens. They've been number one for, you know, almost a decade. So changes aren't going to happen if we are still have your season ticket, you know, base in order. So, yeah, so just put the front office aside for this question.
Okay, all three biggest issues.
With the players, yeah, what are the three biggest issues that you see?
Okay, biggest number one would be point guard.
Yeah.
You know, I like Chris Dunn, the idea of Chris Dunn. I like how tough he is. But is he a point guard for a playoff team? I don't think so. So I think that's something you have to address. You know, whether it's you go young or whether you bring a veteran in, which I think might make more sense,
mm-hmm.
a veteran to corral the younger guys. I think it's figuring out where Lauri Markkanen fits. Is he your number one scorer? Is he your complementary scorer? You know, how is that going to go forward? What kind of player is he? Because we're not finding it out under Jim Boylan. So I think that's got to be more of who they hire as the next coach.
Yeah.
After that, I mean, I think there's going to be some stuff. They got to really fill the roster. They have like four or five guys that are good. You don't know where they're going to start or not. Like, do you keep Bobby Portis? Do you re-sign him? I don't know if you do. I like Bobby a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's a good guy on a team, but is he worth the money they're going to have to pay him to stay? What does he really do besides be the energy guy off the bench? So I think these are some big issues, and obviously making sure they lose enough games to, you know, get a top three pick.
So specifically about Portis, what do you think is a fair dollar amount for him? I think he's awful defensively. I think he's Parker without the cam, you know, without the pictures.
It's tough to say, like, what's a fair dollar amount. Like, what's, you know, what do you and I think a guy should be paid?
Yeah.
Or, like, what does the market say he should be paid? Whatever Taj Gibson got, and then like chop off like $5 million, you know,
right,
about that.
Right.
It's about $5 million worse than Taj.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Taj, I sent you a list of free agents for next year. I mean, I think we're both in agreement. Durant's not coming here. Klay Thompson, the team's
right.
Too bad. But there's that second tier of guys that they'll realistically be in play for. They always have been. And that's, you know, Patrick Beverley, Terrence Ross, Wes Matthews, Taj Gibson. I sent you that list. Any names
right.
on that list that you liked?
Okay. Well, I mean, just, you know, I like Patrick Beverley. I don't know if he fits in what they want to do, but he's, if you want to bring toughness to a team, yeah, you know, Patrick Beverley's the guy you want. He's the toughest guy in the NBA, you know, West Side guy. Love Chicago. I talked to him about it at one of Joakim Noah's charity things. So he loves that. Chris Middleton's obviously the best, I think, the best guy on this, you know, as far as age and ability. Mm-hmm. You know, he would be a guy you want. Some people say Tobias Harris. I don't know. Ricky Rubio would be fun. Yeah. I mean, has he stayed healthy this year?
I don't think so. He hasn't been healthy consistently in a long time. That's the issue with him.
Is he built for this NBA? Yeah. I don't know. J.J. Redick would have been great in 2010. You know, when they wanted him and they signed him in an offer sheet.
Yeah. That worked out, though, because I was happy we got Korver. I thought Korver was
But they were going to both. That was the thing.
They
were literally going to keep both of them.
Oh, my gosh. I wasn't aware of that. I'm sure Tibbs
that's what they said.
I'm sure Tibbs wouldn't have been happy with his defense. He still would have been behind, you know, somebody on that team. But that's hilarious. I wasn't aware of that.
I'm pretty sure I remember that like that because there was – You know, at one point, yeah, I think they were able to. I think they would have been able to, like, finagle it somehow. That's what I heard. Danny Green would be cool. These guys you mentioned. I mean, I know that Casey started the Derrick Rose back to Chicago thing. I think for everyone it's best he doesn't. Mm-hmm. I think it's best for him, and I think it's best for the Bulls. You know, let's just remember Derrick, you know, for the good – I mean, the people are going to remember the bad times first, I think, depending on who you are.
Yeah.
But I say let's just remember Derrick – you know, in the old days, and move on.
Yeah. Well, you know, the fact that we're even discussing it, because I brought it up before the season began in the Bulls Outsiders tryouts, is wouldn't it be a great story? Because Derrick played well in the playoffs last year. And I brought it up. Wouldn't it be great to bring him back and win our seventh title next year, as you know, just to see how people would react? And I was literally almost laughed out of the room. To see it at this point where it's actually a legitimate discussion is a huge victory for Derrick in itself. So that's a good thing. What's your greatest memory as a Bulls fan? What's the highlight of your, you know, you're 40 years old, so you've seen a lot of great moments and you've seen a lot of heartache. What's your greatest moment and your worst moment?
I mean, you know, from covering them or what? Or like being a fan, like when I was a fan, I'm not a fan anymore.
Have you covered? Yeah, but yeah, as a fan, were you actually a beat writer for the team? I mean,
I was just a columnist.
Columnist, exactly. And I'm sure there were a lot of times where you had interviews with major guys. Yeah, I'd like to hear your highlight as a covering the team, but also your highlight as a fan.
Covering the team was obviously that, you know, 2010-2011 season. You know, that was we all agree, everyone that covered that was the best, you know, team we've covered because they're fun. Everyone's pretty accessible, and it was like it was pretty unexpected that they would be that good.
Yes.
You know, no one really expected them to be that good. So that was really fun, you know, how good they were and how, like I said, like even Tibbs was like accessible back then. You know, there was like no negatives on that team. You know, Derek was great. We talked to him all the time and it was just like every couple weeks was something else, like a new benchmark they would hit.
Yeah,
you know, they hadn't beat the Lakers in 4 years. They beat the Lakers. You know, they beat LeBron, and everyone goes nuts. So that was just such a fun year. And, you know, I think they kind of got to as far as they could get. I don't think we can really say that was they were better than LeBron and Wade and Bosh. You know, it was kind of like they hit their wall.
Mm.
So, to me, that was the best. I just thought that the next year's team was even better.
No doubt.
Because they're used to each other. They had the benefit of, you know, with that lockout, everyone else was kind of playing catch up. And because they returned the exact same team, they just jumped right into it. So that was a shame. You know, it was a real shame what the NBA did with that schedule. Because I think that basically screwed Derek for the rest of his career.
No,
you know, just
100%.
And they tried. They sat him a lot, too, especially the end of the season. You know, I think the Bulls, you know, and Tibbs, they got a lot of shit for it, but they also, I think they tried to get him fresh for the playoffs. It just, I think his body was always going to break down because he put so much thrust and, you know, so much torque in the way he played. It's like, wasn't going to last. As a fan, you know, I mean, yeah, when I was a kid, I liked watching the Bulls win championships. It was fun, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I remember one more than the other. Maybe that Suns one.
Yeah, that was great.
Just because they, you know, Barkley was kind of ascendant, and people thought that was, you know, they're going to get knocked off. I thought that was a fun one. But, you know, I'm watching in Ohio, so I don't really have the same experience of people watching here where it's like a communal thing.
Yeah, good point, good point. Regarding the 2011-12 team, I agree with you. I think that team was better. Regardless of what you think of Rip Hamilton, he's an upgrade on Keith Bogans, who was, you know, almost completely worthless. Yeah, so that team, you don't believe, though, they would have knocked off the Heat?
Well, I think that team might have.
Yeah.
I think, the first year's team, I mean, when they lost the Heat, I was like, that was as far as they go. I think that lockout team, I thought at the time they could, just because of the, like I said, they had the continuity. They had a lot of confidence. They were really confident going into that postseason.
Yeah.
That's what made Derek's injury so, so tough to deal with. And that in itself is like why the backlash was so severe that next year, because I think so many of us, reporters too, but like really the fans put so much into Derek coming back. And I think it's just like really because he made people so happy that people just didn't know how to deal with it, when that happened. It was it's definitely a weird reaction. I don't think that they obviously everyone handled poorly and yada, 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 here we are.
Yeah. And another thing people forget too, the Heat weren't the Heat yet. They had just lost to Dirk and his band of, good to not to great players. They were beatable at that time. They weren't looked at as unbeatable in 2011-12. And makes it more difficult. Just makes it more difficult in retrospect. Hey, John, I can't thank you enough for your time here. To wrap this up, I'd like to get your prediction on what you think is going to happen with this team. If you had a bet right now, if you were a betting man, do you feel like Boylan will be fired, but Pax and Gar will be here next year? Or do you think it's got to the point now where there's a legitimate chance that this might be a firing and a cleaning house?
No, I don't think there's a legitimate chance. I don't see Michael Reinsdorf doing that. The only way Paxton leaves is if Paxton quits. Yeah. He walks in there and says, I'm done. I just don't think they have – Michael Reinsdorf has the wherewithal to do it. And I know Jerry won't do it. So, yeah, I think Paxton Gar here. I don't even think that's really much of a discussion. And I think they let Jim Boylan go because the players have tuned him out. It's obvious. They get beat by – I think right now, as we're talking, they've got me by 17 or more points 9 times.
Yeah.
And he's got a full, most of those losses, I think, are with a pretty full roster. I think a couple were thin. But, that's a sign. These guys aren't listening anymore. They don't believe in Jim Boylan at all. I mean, as a group, maybe a couple guys, are okay with him. But, and these guys want to be, professional athletes want to be coached hard. They don't want, they want to win. Any guy I've ever talked to, they want a coach that's going to coach them hard, but they have to believe that the coach knows what he's talking about.
Yes.
And there has to be some results behind it. You can't keep saying, I don't care about the final score. I mean, what does this guy think he's coaching? This isn't a rec league team. This isn't my son. My son's playing tonight with other 7-year-olds or 8-year-olds.
Yeah.
We don't care about that final score. This is the NBA. Where's this guy think he's doing? It's it's crazy. I think the Boylan stuff, honestly, they should fire him right now, but they're not, they're not going to, and I think it's good because they're losing a lot of games.
Yeah.
But Pete Myers should have this job. Pete Myers is the interim coach. That they took Pete Myers' interim coaching role. It could have been his third stint.
Yeah, great point. No, I agree with you too. And after last night's game, he's talking about grit and desire, and I'm just like, give me a break. Yeah, the grit and desire. You got Ryan Archinot in the NBA out there getting blown by and getting dunked on Portis. It has nothing to do with grit and desire. It has to do they're not good enough. And he's not good enough.
That's front office stuff too. But in a sense, let's be honest. No one but Paxton believed they were really going to compete this year, right? When he told us that he wasn't going to, it wasn't going to be last year.
John, I did. I don't know if you've heard me on Waddle and Sylvie.
Oh, God, Fred.
Well, let's just take a step back.
You're right. They could have made it the 8th seed if a lot went well, right?
Yeah, I mean, if
that's fine. I'll take that. A 38-win team. I thought 38 would be possible. That's fair. I'm being a jerk now, but I also thought there's a chance they could be really bad.
No, yeah, there was that chance, but Denzel Valentine, I know people like to make jokes about him, but he was their best 3-point shooter. This hasn't worked out with Parker, but having Parker and Denzel Valentine in the second unit would be much better than the disaster that we had experienced this year. you know, and Holiday as a third, as a second unit guy, as opposed to a third guy, you know.
But we also knew they were going to get rid of, they were possibly get rid of Holiday and Lopez. So, you know what I mean? Yeah, like, we knew there was a chance they were going to get rid of some of those guys.
But that wouldn't have happened if you're trending towards the eighth seed or seventh seed.
Yeah.
You know, they wouldn't have got rid of them.
You know what? Unless they could make $800,000 or something,
You're putting me in a further depression, John. I got to admit. I mean, this is just, it's such a horrible situation. And you kind of alluded to a fact that I'm worried about, which I think is a worst-case scenario if Paxton says I'm done. I think it's possible. I talked to him.
That's not a worst-case scenario.
Well, it absolutely is if you're turning it over to Gar.
I wish he would win. He's put a lot of his life into this team, his health. But, I mean, there's other people they can hire. I mean, I know Jerry Reinsdorf doesn't want, and really doesn't like to hire people that he's not familiar with. I mean, that's just like the way he wants it to be, a good kind of relationship that's like already set. But I mean, give me a break. Like, there's other people that know the NBA, not just, you know, even though they didn't hit a three in the NBA finals, they can still make some decisions.
Yeah,
so,
but if he turns it all over to Gar, that's my point. If he just says, all right, see you later,
that would be
John.
Crazy if they did that. If they did that, then I don't know. I think KC Johnson talked about this in his mailbag today. I'll give him a hat tip on this. Like, when you talk about the fans and, like, losing money and, like, you know, the fans, it's more about, like, the selling luxury suites and selling those private clubs, because that's where you get a lot of money in sponsorships.
Yeah.
If, you know, I can't imagine them selling private club, you know, like the real, people keep the luxury suites, the rich people, because you use it for concerts, you know, and things like that. But like, you know, they're losing, man. And like, I remember when they made that playoffs with that terrible team. I talked to fans who said, like, they were dropping the Bulls. They didn't pay their deposit for playoff tickets. And the Bulls were like, yeah, you know, called them like, hey, if you don't pay this for playoff tickets, you don't get your season tickets next year. And they're like, yeah, I know. That's the point. Like, I don't think you get that. That's what I'm saying here. I don't want tickets anymore. And they said, of course, what happened next is those ticket sellers were calling them back saying, hey, are you sure? Like, hey, let's get you – don't worry about the playoffs. Let's get you back for next year. So they're in some trouble with that. Like, if they said, we're giving this over to Gar Foreman, even though a lot of fans have no clue what Gar actually does or doesn't do, it would be a disaster.
A PR disaster, exactly.
Yeah, a PR disaster.
I agree. John Gold, as usual, thank you so much for joining Bullseye for the first time. I can't thank you enough for the great job you do at the Athletic. It's just fantastic to read what you and Steph and Darnell Mayberry do on a daily basis. It really makes this an oasis in a Bulls wasteland.
All right. Well, I'll talk to you again after they draft Zion.